Hello and welcome. My name is Jennifer Ray from jenniferray.com. In today's interview, I'm speaking with Jill Satterfield, an international mindfulness and meditation teacher. Jill is the founder and director of the School for Compassionate Action, as well as the founder of Vajra Yoga and Meditation. Jill has been featured in many publications, including the New York Times, Yoga Journal, Tricycle Magazine, and Shambhala Sun. She's been working in the field of integrative healthcare for over 35 years. I'm really excited to have Jill here today because of her personal story. For many years, she worked with chronic pain and illness, and she found a way for the Buddhist contemplative and mindfulness practices to help her find greater ease and peace.
Start there. How did you get started?
Basically through an illness. Mm-hmm. When I was 19, I was suddenly struck with what became chronic pain. And I had taken a movement class that actually happened to be yoga. It wasn't called yoga. At that time, you know, yoga was a little bit hard to find. So this was in the very end of the 70s, late 70s. So when I was in pain, I was basically told there wasn't a whole lot I could do, and that all of it was in my mind. And so I started to seek out some alternatives to help myself. So that's how I fell into yoga and eventually then into meditation, because the yoga wasn't actually helping me too much at that point with my affliction. It was helping me overall with my health, but not with the chronic pain or the condition that caused it. And so that led me into meditation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you started, how long ago was that, did you say?
Late 70s.
Late 70s. Okay. So you sort of started kind of finding yoga just randomly here and there through different classes and...
Well, yeah. I mean, no, you had to really search it out.
Yeah.
It wasn't all that available at the time. I mean, there were Iyengar teachers and practitioners, and there were Shivananda teachers and practitioners, but it was nothing like it is today.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you really deliberately had to search it out. So after I fell into it auspiciously, let's say, I found a class, I thought it was movement, it turned out to be yoga. Once I experienced it, then I really sought it out. But, you know, it wasn't on every corner, hardly any corner at that time. And so it did take a little determination to find a class.
Right, yeah. So this was all sort of at the same time that you were dealing with chronic pain.
It was at the same time, yeah.
And so tell us a little bit about that. What was going on there? What was that journey like?
It was long, it was arduous, it was lonely, it was confusing,
mm-hmm.
a lot of it. But you know, because nobody could figure out the genesis of the pain or figure out what was causing it,
mm-hmm.
And I had every test in the book, I was basically dismissed by most of the doctors that I went to see,
mm-hmm.
You know, probably out of their own frustration.
Mm-hmm.
But rather than lead me towards any kind of alternative, people just regularly told me basically to take a couple of these or a few of those and go home.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe change my diet. And my diet had nothing to do with what was going on. So, you know, I saw a lot of different doctors in New York City, all the best, really. Internists, gastroenterologists, gynecologists, because nobody even could figure out what organ or gland, you know, was causing the problem. And so I kind of got to know everybody that I could in the city and did all the tests that they recommended, even ended up taking hormones for a couple of years. But when that was of no help, I started seeking out surgeons. But basically, you know, that was the very lonely and patronizing part of it. There wasn't any outside help, and actually people weren't even believing that my pain was real.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Psychosomatic, and if something's psychosomatic, it's deemed to be not real.
Mm-hmm.
It's, if you feel pain, it's real.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was was tough. I was very young. I was 19 when this started, and alternative medicine wasn't then what it is now. Mm-hmm. And yoga and meditation were, like I said, a little bit harder to find. Mm-hmm. They were available. It was available, but it was a little bit harder. It wasn't mainstream. Mm-hmm. So, it was not a fun time. But, I had a couple of major surgeries. The first one found some things on my ovaries, which they thought was the cause of my condition, and it turned out not to be. I didn't find that out until after I'd healed. And then a few years later, I insisted on another surgery, and this surgeon found that part of my large intestine had knotted and twisted and traveled up to my heart and had herniated the diaphragm in the meantime and had the appendix still hanging onto it and then wound its way back down. So it was a very circuitous route. Why nobody saw that in the MRIs or the bariums or any of the tests I had, I think, because that is a question a lot of people ask me, I think is because even now, people have become so sectioned in their approach. They know this system or that system or this part of the body or this bone or this, organ or gland, whatever it is, but nobody ventured up beyond my navel. They just assumed that it was a reproductive organ system problem, which it wasn't. It turned out not to be. Mm-hmm. So once that was discovered and my intestine was stitched back down, I had no peristalsis and I was still in chronic pain. So I was told there was nothing you could do about not having peristalsis because it's part of the autonomic nervous system, mm-hmm. that you can't retrain or retrigger a part of the autonomic nervous system. And then I went to deal with my pain at Yale Pain Clinic, and they told me all they could do was deaden my nerves so that the area wouldn't feel anything. Mm-hmm. The problem with that was that it could have caused a coma or paralysis. So I thought, that's not an alternative for me. And I didn't really want to deaden a part of my body anyway.
Right.
And the pain to me was signifying that there was something wrong. What could I do about it? I didn't want to just, deaden it. So that's that time, that was a very critical moment really for me, because that's when I vowed to help myself. Mm-hmm. And then I actively sought out ways to work with my mind, because if the pain was all in my mind, which I didn't think it was, but if it was, I needed to work with the mind that was registering the pain.
Yeah.
And, I didn't know of any other way to do that but meditation, which was a very good guess. So I started going on silent retreats, 10-day silent Vipassana retreats, and I began to be able to not only work with the mind that was registering the pain, but I began to be able to work with my own body. Mm-hmm. And so it took me about 7 years, and I was able to re-trigger peristalsis, completely freaking out the doctors. it's impossible. And I was very proud of myself. It was a lot of work, I have to say. But it took a few more years, and then I was eventually able to be pain-free. So mainly I did it through meditation.
Yeah.
But I had the support of knowing my body pretty well through yoga and knowing the yoga postures that facilitated some nourishment, renewal, vitality, regeneration,
right,
that area of my body. And so I would take those poses for very long periods of time, mm-hmm. and meditate in them. Mm-hmm. So I was not doing a vinyasa flow. I was really breaking it down. What's good for the intestinal system? What's good for my lymph, etc.? And I would hold it almost like the old yoga hospitals, I don't know if they're still happening in India or not, but where they kind of bind you up in a posture and keep you there for a while because it moves blood and energy and breath into different areas of the body. Uh-huh. So I made up my own yoga hospital. I didn't know that existed. But one of the very greatest aspects of that whole time was that I didn't know it at the time, but what I was doing was I was tapping into a lot of information that's collective. And so I learned to move energy on my own. I learned or I just kind of intuited how to put myself in these poses and hold them and what to do inside of them. Nobody taught me how to do that. And it wasn't through my own imagination so much. It was, I think, because I just tapped into more, a larger wisdom.
Yeah.
When we're meditating and we're quiet and the mind is really more open, that's when insights come in and wisdom arises and, you know, intuition gets strengthened, or it can. Mm-hmm. So that's what I utilized.
That's great. Wow.
I find out afterwards that I had tapped into, you know, information. For instance, the way that I was working with energy, I was told, you know, maybe 25 years after I healed, by one of my Tibetan teachers, oh, he said, that's bliss. Like, really? He said, yes, you need to teach that.
Yeah.
Because it's consciousness, it's just mind. And so then I started to look into it, and I started reading about some of the tantric healing practices from Tibet. And I, some of the things that I read, I realized, wow, what I was doing was very similar, if not almost exactly like some of these practices. I just didn't know about it.
Wow.
So nobody really, I don't think, invents something so much as tap in.
Yeah, yeah, amazing. Well, and that's the thing, right? So, of course, the sort of teachers of those traditions, it's they're teaching what they have learned through tapping in, through very deep practice over
deep long practice periods and also
of time.
So, you know, I mean,
right,
it's
right.
One thing to be able to tap in, and it's another thing to, and luckily this didn't happen to me, go down the wrong route with it. You know, I mean, you can go a little haywire. So it's real important to have teachers. Now, I did have extraordinary, and I do still have extraordinary teachers in the Vipassana tradition that were able to steer me, whether I talked to them about this or not, and I didn't really, but were able to steer me in very sane directions. Because I could, you know, I really understand how something like this could take you off into a different track.
Yeah.
And, you know, you would think that you're really powerful and you're really, you know, maybe all-seeing and maybe a little bigger than you are.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a very powerful experience that you've had, you know, and you definitely developed a very deep practice over time as well, and with the support of a lot of teachers, it sounds like. So really, yeah. You were able to, you started in a place of chronic pain and through, you know, probably the course of 15 years or so, would that be right?
Yeah.
Over quite a long period of time, around 15 years, you were, first of all, able to regain peristalsis in your intestines after doctors told you there would be no way for the rest of your life you would have that. So that's incredible. And now, still to this day, you're pretty much pain-free from that condition, hey?
Not even pretty much.
Yeah.
Totally pain-free.
Totally pain-free. So that's incredible. Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, like you mentioned, you know, the tapping in to that inner wisdom, right? And then being able to rest in poses. I find that particularly interesting because I teach a lot of yin yoga and a lot of restorative yoga. And so, you know, we do hold the postures for longer periods of time, and it allows this nourishing, all of the blood and the fluid and just the opening in the tissues, you know, and physically and energetically as well. So I totally connect with that for sure.
But the interesting thing is that I think, you know, we can take a pose. If somebody says, all right, let's try this particular posture, and we're in it, but we may not know what to do. We may not know how to actually be in the posture itself, how to move awareness, how to work with the pose itself. And I think that this is something that needs to be taught a little bit more than it is.
Yeah.
It's certainly something that I'm teaching, but is that it's not just about, you know, letting the pose work for you. There's a participation that's absolutely necessary for it's like a collaboration and a participation between the mind and the body that has to start to happen, and then the heart also, to really not only make conscious what you're doing, but to kickstart something and change its direction, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to shut this window. I think that there's a certain amount of responsibility that each of us can take to develop and discover ways that we can work within ourselves that might not be taught in a normal yin class. And I'm not saying that you're not teaching it this way, but I think for people that are listening in, you know, a pose is just a pose unless you actually are participating with it and you've trained your mind to stay awake and aware and track what's going on. And then once you've trained the mind to stay awake and be able to stay in the body and track what's going on, then you can start to direct the awareness in ways that are helpful to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would say even in a lot of ways, that's what differentiates yoga from just exercise or, you know.
It's also beyond what's being taught right now.
Because it is, yeah.
A lot of people, you know, want to be spiritual with yoga, and they start to be. But finding spirituality in a yoga class that has music, for instance, is pretty hard. Mm-hmm. It's challenging. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's impossible. Everything's possible. But I would not say that's necessarily the route to go. And also, you know, in order to really tap into your own mind, mm-hmm. you need to be able to do that on your own, not be told, breathe now, move your leg now, change your position now, you know, get happy now. Mm-hmm. It's not about that if you want to go in this kind of direction.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and so, for you know, again, for me, it's like, that's why I really love this joining of more contemplative practices, the sort of meditative practices with the physical movement, the asana.
Thank goodness it's getting more popular.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
Because a lot of people find, you know, hey, it's, after a while, what else is there to this, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. to this tradition or these practices? And, you know, those that want to will seek out ways to further deepen and blossom and work with themselves so that it becomes your life. Mm-hmm. It's not just your practice, it's your life. Mm-hmm. And so that's where especially the Buddhist path is very helpful. It gives us ways, it steers us on a path and keep of morality, of ethics, mm-hmm. you know, right livelihood, of, you know, maintaining goodness in your life, really.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about sort of the importance of having some sort of home practice, some daily practice, something that we can return to.
That is of the utmost importance. And I think it's where most people have a little bit of a stumbling block. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of mentoring. And a lot of the mentoring that I do is to help people have a practice, mm-hmm. to develop a home practice. Because sometimes, you know, you're not sure what to do. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so you need some guidance. So I think it's very important to have some guidance with a teacher of some kind. Mm-hmm. But it's also really important to allow yourself permission to just play around. Mm-hmm. You know, like, do you do some yoga before you sit? Do you sit before you do yoga? Do you do pranayama before, after, during? You know, well, how does each make you feel? Mm-hmm. And so with guidance, you know, obviously, we discover, I think, how we can package and arrange a practice so that we want to do it, so that we're actually taking our own pulse, mm-hmm. listening to our hearts, checking in with our minds, asking our body how it's feeling, and then, okay, well, because of this information, maybe I'll try this first or I'll do a little of that. And that way, it's more satisfying, mm-hmm. rather than, oh, well, you know, I don't really know what to do, so I'll do this routine. That's might be how we start, but if you want to develop your own personal practice, it's good to start experimenting and check in with your teacher as well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because when we're at home, we have the time to, even if it's 10 minutes, I'm not saying you have to have hours and hours of time for home practice. Not everybody has the luxury of that time. Mm-hmm. But even in 10 minutes, nobody's telling you what to do. So let's say you want to linger on something a little longer, you can. Mm-hmm. You want to try this practice, you can. And no one's telling you it's time to get up or it's time to go or it's time to try something else. Mm-hmm. And you get more and more creative and eventually you start to trust mm-hmm. your own process within these traditions and techniques. You trust oh, well, this works like this and this works like that. Let me try this today. So it's kind of like, you know, you want to have a teacher to teach you the ingredients, but eventually it's your pot.
Yeah.
You're cooking it. And of course, someone else can always refine and always give you directions as to different ways to try. Now you've maybe sampled this soup for this long, try this one, or add a second course, or finish it off with this dessert, or, you know, whatever it is. Someone will be guiding you, but you're the one that's in there, you know, experimenting with the flavors and stirring the pot and letting it sit for so long and letting it rise for this long or whatever, you know, metaphor I can come up with. Cooking metaphor. It's important to play.
Yeah, and I mean, there is a balance there, I think, because on one hand, you're absolutely right that taking that time and really figuring out what is right for me in my practice today in this season of my life, and then also just the importance of having that guidance of those teachers that are around long term. Because I think also in our culture, there's very much this tendency to like get onto the next new thing, or always want variety or newness, and so that's a part of our practice too, is being able to just stay with that cushion there that you have to sit down on every morning, and it's the same practice on some level every morning, you know,
sometimes
you know, but you're right, like having that balance and having the freedom, giving yourself that freedom also to explore into what is it that really nourishes me. I think an interesting inquiry for sure.
Yeah. And to look for people that have been doing what you're interested in a lot longer than you have. You know, in this culture, in our culture, our Western culture, there's not a lot of emphasis on wisdom teachers, you know, or people that have been around for a little longer.
Yeah.
We kind of like, we push people away once they start to get a little bit saggy and wrinkly.
And
that's a shame, because those are the gems, you know.
Absolutely.
The jewels are the people who have been doing something for a long time.
Yeah.
Because they've been through it.
Right. So, well, let's talk about that. So tell us a little bit about what you're up to now. What are some things that people might be interested in? What are you excited about these days?
Oh, let's see. Well, I'm working on developing a possible wellness center where I'm living with somebody. And I'm bringing yoga and Buddhism teacher trainings to San Francisco. And I'm obviously very actively involved in Spirit Rock. And I do a lot of mentoring. So I work with people on Skype all over the world and help them develop their practice and as importantly, help people understand how they can just make this part of their life so that your mindfulness is leading you towards more and more ease. Because you're seeing where you suffer one moment to the next. And it's through our acknowledgement of how our mind works, what our patterns are, and that knowing that we have choices, that we don't have to be victimized by our own mind or by our own patterns that somebody might have even introduced to us when we were younger. And we figure out that we, or when we acknowledge that we have those choices, that I like to help people work with developing the strength to take, you know, more and more choices so that their life is a little bit happier.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a life practice that includes, you know, a lot of different kinds of techniques, or let's say it includes mindfulness of the body. You know, there's so many things we can do to be mindful of our body, which, you know, it's the first of the four foundations that the Buddha taught. Mindfulness of the body is in and of itself, a complete practice. So I've been counseling people about that, and yeah, that all keeps me pretty busy. I'm also writing a book. So
okay, and you're also offering some trainings and workshops and things like that in Europe this summer. Is that right, or fall?
In October.
October.
I have a 200-hour yoga and meditation teacher training in Holland.
Okay.
And in, I think, February, I'll be starting something here in San Francisco.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. So just sort of wrapping up, I'm wondering if maybe we can come up with something, some sort of action point that we can offer to people listening to this, if this all sounds sort of interesting to people. You know, we spoke maybe about the home practice, something, you know, somebody that is sort of maybe been practicing for a little while, going to a lot of drop-in classes. What's sort of a next step that somebody could take? Or some, I don't know, whatever you think, if there's sort of an action point, something that perhaps like the starting a home practice, sort of how what would you suggest to somebody who wanted to start a home practice and doesn't really know what that looks like in the beginning?
To start by just checking in with themselves daily. And you can do this as many times during the day as you like, where you find a quiet spot, relatively quiet. You know, if you live in a city, it's not that quiet, but mm-hmm. a relatively quiet spot where no one's bothering you. And either with your eyes open or your eyes closed, you invite your awareness into the room and then into your body. And you check in and see. I have a YouTube video of this, if anybody is in, just a little 10-minute guidance through this. But you're just scanning your own body, feeling what's going on, becoming acquainted more and more with the state of your body in that present, you know, at that time. Mm-hmm. Checking in with your heart, really important. Ask your heart how it's doing. Mm-hmm. You know, what's going on in the emotional body right now? And then check in with your mind. What's the landscape of the mind? What is your mind thinking about? Or, you know, is your mind calm? Is it not calm? What's going on? Check in with your breath. Where is your breath? What's the cadence, the rhythm of your breath, etc.? And by checking in with ourselves over and over and over again, we start to have union. We actually start communicating with ourselves, you know, and all our components start to come together and listen, mm-hmm. and listen to each other. And so we can be listening. And it's kind of funny, there's the observer and then there's the observed. But we have all those components. They're not really contradictory. But just to start getting to know ourselves a little bit more deeply, because mm-hmm. how many times during the day do you say, hey, how are you, to yourself? Mm-hmm. You know, not usually that often. We're usually looking outward and saying, how are you? Mm-hmm. How can I help you? Mm-hmm. But rarely are we turning that back towards ourselves. And I think that's a very beautiful first start. It also lends itself to taking better care of ourselves, you know, and being a little bit kinder to ourselves, because just that simple checking in practice is an act of kindness. Mm. And, you know, self-compassion is not really taught in our culture anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's probably one of the most, in my mind, meaningful practices that we as Westerners can take on. Mm-hmm. We're generally not that kind to ourselves. We're actually very hard on ourselves. Very self-critical. Mm-hmm. So by checking in 10 minutes a day, maybe even twice a day, I think there's a lot of gems that will just start to float to the surface. And, excuse me, it's training. It's giving us really a method in which to start to mine our own wisdom and insight. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But given that, then we check in with somebody else who's been doing the, you know, been walking the path that we would like to take a little longer than we have, because that's really important to have some guidance early on. You know, I would never wish anyone, you know, I would never wish it upon anyone to have to go through what I went through, and that's why I teach. Mm. Otherwise, I wouldn't be teaching. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So just so that everybody knows that, you know, you can be creative with your practice. That practice isn't always just sitting on a cushion or doing something on a mat. It includes nature, it can include poetry, it can include friendship. But to have that creativity and that permission to be creative, but to also know that you can choose your teachers. Mm-hmm. So the teachers that you choose are the people that are walking the path that you want to walk, and that they're actually living it. Mm-hmm. You know, someone that's been doing it for a little while. Yeah. And see, by virtue of who they are, what their practice is like. You know, you can tell a great deal about someone by how kind they are, how generous they are, how happy they are, you know, how at ease they are with themselves. And so that's another, you know, way to choose a teacher, and to not feel shy about reaching out to somebody and saying, hey, you know, I have some questions. Can you help me?
Yeah.
Anybody that's a teacher wants to help. Mm-hmm. Somebody doesn't have time, then that tells you a little bit about what's going on. Mm-hmm. Too busy, or maybe there's no connection or whatever it is. But, you know, to seek people out. I mean, now we have Skype. We can contact people all over the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Amazing. So there's to keep a connection with someone is really, really important.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. So for people who are just sort of wanting to start something, at home, taking that little bit of time every day to really...
activity and connection. I think those might be the two main things to focus on. And to know also that in the beginning, especially in the beginning, your mind is not going to be free of all thoughts. Mm-hmm. You know, that doesn't happen. The mind is very good at thinking. It does an excellent job of it. And when you sit down in the beginning and you start to even just notice your own thoughts, your thoughts will be rather loud, mm-hmm. and they might be even overwhelming. And just know that that's because by looking at your mind, you've just turned up the volume on what is already there. And then little by little with training, you'll have a little bit of a moment here or there in between your thoughts. And those little moments are like heaven, you know, incredibly blissful and peaceful. And it's the same thing with your body. Sometimes when you turn your awareness to your body, you know, you're heightening what the body might be feeling. And that may not be necessarily pleasant. And again, that's why we want to have a teacher. Mm. But that may not be the state of your body at all times. So it's like when you turn a flashlight, which is the light of awareness really on anything, it gets brighter. Mm-hmm. And just remember that that is part of the process. Mm. So a little louder, they might become a little brighter or heightened. You know, our awareness gets heightened when our awareness is heightened about something when we first turn toward it and stick a little bit of light on the subject. Mm-hmm. So not to be discouraged by that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's mind is busy and everybody's body has some, you know, something going on. That's the state of having a body and a mind.
Okay.
That's what it is to be human. Mm-hmm. How we work with what we see is what we can develop. Mm-hmm. I think that's where the hope is and where the real radical change starts to happen is that, you know, we may not like everything that our life delivers to us or our body delivers to us or our mind delivers to us, but we can definitely work with what it is and so that it's not a burden. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're not victimized by a mind that's kind of out of control. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how we work with what we see is where we develop, I think is what you said. That's great. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, so we start with a little time, you know, maybe hopefully maybe this will inspire somebody to sit or to, you know, to start meditating or just to check in and or to take a yoga pose and notice where you're breathing in it. Mm-hmm. Notice what thoughts are coming up. Notice how you feel about it. Notice if you want to rush through it or you want to linger, things like that. And then to be creative with what you practice. At first, practice the things that make you feel good. Mm-hmm. Don't practice the hardest things because mm-hmm. that's discouraging. Mm-hmm. Then we don't really enjoy it and then we won't do it. Mm-hmm. So you want to practice things that bring you joy, that make you feel better. And then the connection of finding a teacher. You know, to help you along, to give you some guidance. It doesn't have to be every day. It doesn't have to be every week, but just mm-hmm. to check in with, you know, am I still on the right path? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then just to know, I guess, then there's the overarching umbrella of, hey, guess what? You know, you will be able to work with what you see. And that's the hope and inspiration, I think, that keeps us going. And little by little, you do feel that there is a difference from taking the time to do a practice.
Mm-hmm. Great. Great. So that looking in, body, mind, heart, breath, and then also the importance of having the supporting guidance of a teacher in the longer term, and then this overarching feeling of knowing that we'll be able to deal with whatever we find or be with. Yeah.
And there's a lot of hope in that, because I think that sometimes people get discouraged early on thinking, oh my God, my mind's going to drive me nuts, or I'm always going to have these overwhelming thoughts. Mm-hmm. And that's not true. Mm-hmm. That's not true. That's just the habit of the mind that we notice at that time. And especially the Buddhist meditation is about, or the Vipassana style of meditation is about working with the habits that we see. Mm-hmm. We work with the mind that's already been conditioned.
Great.
And we condition it. Basically, that's what we do. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Jill, for speaking with me. If you'd like to learn more about Jill, you can visit her over at jillsatterfield.org. And you're also welcome to sign up for my mailing list over at jenniferray.com. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.